Alex Majorana.
And I'm Sydney Lynch.
And this is Little Known Tracks. This week we talked to Florida-based rock band Camp Trash. Despite their vastly different interests, their passion for music brings the band together. Having been in the music scene for a long time, each member of the band brings something unique to the table.
Their debut album, The Long Way, The Slow Way, was written with intent and assembled to identify the themes and stories in the songs. The band is looking forward to getting on the road this fall, headlining a tour with Metallica. Without further ado, Lake Erie Boys by Camp Trash. Come on.
Alex, Brian, and Levi of Camp Trash, thank you guys so much for being on with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having
us. Hey.
Thanks for having us.
I think we wanted to start a little bit with just the four of you, like even the three, is your hobbies really, like the things that you do outside of music really are in the most like separate areas that I think I've seen like in a band. So how does that work for you guys? Like, do you guys like do anything outside of music together? Like, do you hang out and just like shoot the shit, or like, do you play sports together? Like, what's the move for y'all?
Well, Alex and I we did play on a hockey team for like a hot second together at one point, but I would say like outside of music, that we actually don't do a lot together. But also, let's be like, right now, it's not that we wouldn't. It's just that right now we don't live close to each other, so. The only reason why we would get together is because like Camp Trash has something that we need to do. So like, but yeah, I do think that we all kind of have like our unique hobbies or like things that we do, that I think music is definitely the one thing that brought us together for sure.
Definitely.
So you said, the two of you, Brian and Alex were on a hockey team. And Brian, you told us that you were really into a lot of other sports. Just talk to us a little bit about that and like where your love of sports, either watching or playing or both, came from.
Yeah, so I'm originally from Michigan. I grew up like 45 minutes north of Detroit. Like I come from a big family, so I really was really close to like a lot of my cousins, like really close to my grandparents. One of my closest cousins, his dad grew up playing hockey, was always like a Detroit Red Wings fan. I got really into like Detroit sports through that. And then he like got my dad into like hockey and like kind of taught him the game, which then was like, well, I'm going to let my kids play hockey. So like my brother and I grew up starting playing hockey. And then it just kind of sprouted from there. I just was like, I was an athletic kid. Like I liked playing sports. So I played soccer when I was younger. I played football. I played basketball. I played hockey. I played golf. Like I did all the, I was very much a jock when I was growing up. And it was mostly just because like, that was the only thing to do in Michigan was to like, if you weren't, and I never was really musically talented. That was really like my sister's thing. So like, I just kind of, I gravitated towards playing sports, and my dad being someone who is a classic boomer was somebody who was like, yeah, oh yeah, great. My son's an awesome hockey player. So I'm just going to push that for as long as I can. And then a lot of that changed when I moved down. So like, I played organized sports for so long that like, once I got to Michigan or once I got to Florida, my dad tried to get me to play hockey again. And I was like, I'm so over, like, I don't want to do it anymore. Like I'm not going to college for this. I'm not good enough to be a pro athlete. So like, let me just breathe for a second and like not do sports. So I kind of abandoned everything. I abandoned golf, hockey, everything when I initially moved down here. And that's when I met like Keegan and some other friends that were playing music.
Brian, I'm learning so much about you. I've known you for more than a decade, and this is mostly new information for me.
Great. That's why we're here today.
Awesome. Yeah. Bring the trash.
We're all going to learn about each other today. We're going to bring the band closer. That's what it's all about.
Love it.
Brian, how far did you get? Like, what was the sport you got furthest in, and how far was that?
Definitely hockey. So I played varsity hockey on my high school team in Michigan when I was a sophomore. And actually, if I had continued to play hockey on that team, I would have been, my goalie would have been Connor Hollebeck, who plays for the Winnipeg Jets right now.
No way. Currently.
Yeah. So I like there's people who I played with that I was on teams with that was like this one kid I know, he got like drafted by the New York Rangers, but then like, he kind of got fleshed out on the farm team. Like nothing really happened with it. Another kid actually was drafted by the Red Wings, and then he kind of fleshed out and nothing happened with it. But like there was people in my circle who were far more talented than I was, who got, who ended up getting close to the NHL, but not quite in it.
It's always like 3 degrees, right? Or is it 6 degrees? One of those things, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I went 180. I was like, nope, not sports anymore. I'm gonna do something totally different. So
just one thing. I know you said like you got out of organized sports and then you said golf. And for some reason, like that just did not like, I was like, golf, an organized sport.
I did play on my high school golf team. Yeah. So I was like good in early high school. And then I played a lot. Cause like I said, like my cousins were all into golf. My brother was into golf. And yeah, I don't know. I think I was just playing sports, and everyone who played sports also played golf. And so I just got really into it. And then I moved to Florida. You'd think it would have like encouraged me to keep playing, cause that's like the state for golf. And I just stopped completely. And then now I play every now and then with my dad, but that's pretty much it.
Do you stand by golf? Like, do you think it's a good sport that's fun to play?
Yeah, no, I love golf. I watch golf. Like I'm an
really?
Avid. Yes, I will stand by it. I don't know. I get that it's boring. Like I get.
I was gonna say watching golf to me is like listening to white noise.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah, it like major tournament golf is like, yeah, it's like playoff hockey to me. It's like I don't know. I love it. I get that it's weird. I get that I'm in the minority.
To each
yeah, I think
that's what you're into.
Yeah. I think I would like it. I just feel very resistant because I'm an attorney, and so many of my friends end up playing golf, and it feels so like I'm trying so hard not to be a sellout.
It's what they expect you to do. You are expected to play golf.
And I just can't do the expected thing, but I think I would love it.
That's so funny.
I had a friend in Texas that in college he took like business courses, and he said one of the college courses was like a golf. They taught you how to play golf because he's like, you're gonna have to do this like when you're like if you're doing business in Texas, you're gonna have to be on the golf course. And I was like, that's ridiculous. That's an actual like accredited course. It is awesome. Next level insane.
That's funny.
Wild. While we're in playing things, I know Levi, you said that you were a big fan of speedrunning, specifically Hades.
Yeah, it's the first game. So I speedrun a game named Hades, and it's the first game I felt like good enough at an early enough time that I actually could do it before people got so good that it's impossible to break into it. Like, you can't do Super Mario 64 speedrunning now because it's so optimized. You can't touch it.
Now, for somebody who doesn't know what speedrunning is, could you explain for me? Because I don't know what that means.
It's as literal a term as you possibly could. You're literally like running the game as speedily as you possibly can.
Okay,
you're trying to go start to finish.
You get like a timer. And you literally time yourself.
Oh, that sounds very stressful.
The entirety of that game.
Yeah.
I know Hades has like a lot of like alternate things. Like there's a lot of not necessarily different endings, but like, are you doing it like just single runs, go beat Hades, or are you doing like speed run the whole game?
Yeah, it's a single run to the first final boss encounter. This is the standard way it's done. And my weapon is the two fists Talos aspect. If anyone plays the game, they'll know what that is, but I'm sure if you don't, it's just gibberish.
That's fine. That's what we're here for, to understand the gibberish.
Yeah. And I don't understand it either, but from what I've heard, Levi has got it. What didn't you like rank on it or something? Like, are you?
Yeah. So
you want to brag a little bit is all I'm saying.
You're allowed to do that.
Oh, well,
If
you insist, my fastest time is not recorded, so it's not posted on the leaderboards. It is the second fastest for my weapon in the world, and it's the fastest on the Switch in the world for any weapon. I've got nothing to follow
it
up
good.
With.
That's, you're good at Hades. Okay.
Some would say.
Wow. So why wasn't this like top time recorded?
Oh, because you have to like have a capture card capturing it, and it takes so much storage space, and I just don't have the storage space to always do that.
You know.
you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And we know.
I know I'm
I bad. Trust you. Why would you lie about that?
No one's gonna check though, right?
Yeah.
Right?
I'm gonna need you to mail your Switch over so we can get the time frames on that. And then Alex, you told us a little bit earlier that you were like a graphic designer, and you told us that you do art, generally speaking. So tell us a little bit about that and how you got invested in art.
Yeah, so I mean, I've just always been kind of infatuated with like album art and like, you know, vinyl and being able to like just kind of have a physical piece of the artwork as opposed to just like having it digitally. So from a young age, I've always like, you know, drawn my own like album art or like redesigned CDs that I had and like put them in the slots, like instead of the actual ones. Cause I'm like, oh, my shit's cooler. So yeah, I started making like flyers for shows and stuff pretty early on. Like, you know, coding MySpace pages and shit back in the day. But yeah, I mean, it's always kind of been tied to music for the most part for me. So yeah, it's taken off. I've done a fair amount of like album covers and packaging and layouts and stuff like that now. So yeah, I'm hoping that that picks up, and I think, you know, having that in conjunction with the band has been a good thing too, because I've been able to kind of like showcase like my own work through the band a little bit. So yeah.
Yeah, Alex did the Here Online EP for Worst Party Ever. And there were a couple other ones, like album covers you did, right?
You did Dartland too, right?
I did Dartland too.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, and some other stuff that isn't out quite yet, but yeah. Excited, yeah.
Do you have any like particular pieces, like any album or like poster or anything that like is your absolute favorite that you've done?
I mean, I really love like the photograph that I took for our new album. I think it really is just a really nice picture. And I think that the layout of that, the vinyl is really great. But the Dartland stuff, the inserts specifically for that album are like some of my favorite. So go pick up the vinyl, because it's really cool.
So speaking of music, tell us how you guys got your start in music and how Camp Trash came to be.
So I feel like we all kind of had different journeys of starting music. For the most part, Keegan and I have been writing together since we started writing music or playing music together. But like one of my first like serious bands was a band called Manhattan Roar, which we were just like imagine like Circa Survive Light. Like I was like 17 or 18 at the time.
That band rocked so hard.
and I just sang in that band. I was with like four other guys that were very talented at what they did. But that was kind of like my first band when I moved to Florida. And then Keegan and I had always been writing music together. Levi was always like writing his own stuff, like acoustically, I felt like. I'll let you tell your own story. But and then Alex and I met through music in a way. My sister's ex-boyfriend was in a band called Langdon Auger that Alex was in. He played drums for at the time. And I feel like that's how we connected initially. But yeah, just like I think my initial start was just like playing local. Honestly, it was a MySpace era of like, you know, having your MySpace page, getting as many followers, trying to be on band's top eights. And it was, that was like my initial start. And I hated it so much because it was like so competitive when I was like starting. It felt like there were so many bands that just like wanted you to fail. And like, I was just like a little like 17, 18 year old kid who was like, I hated it so much because I just felt like I'm not good enough to be competing and everyone is competing. So like that mentality is like something that really stirred me into wanting to write music with Keegan, because like there was a community kind of brewing in Sarasota at the time of just like kids that were doing a lot of DIY projects and bands that were like getting their feet wet as like being musicians and songwriters. And it felt like it was such a supportive community that we started kind of writing and entering that community a little bit. And I feel like that was kind of like where it took off for me, where it started to really be fun. You know, it was like, I was learning in my first band, but then like was able to really like enjoy playing music within that second band that I started.
Me and Keegan are brothers. Keegan does the lead guitar and I do bass and harmonies in the band. We grew up with a dad who was a professional musician. He was in a couple of bands growing up and has been like a church worship pastor for a lot of our lives. So we've been playing music for a long time. We grew up playing it together and in church with our dad. But me and Keegan were always kind of doing our separate music things. He at some point left for college and did much cooler music things than I will ever do in my life. But I've always been interested in just the most fun possible music that you can make, whatever music is easy to sing along to and loud and fun to sing while in a room with a bunch of your friends. Tiger's Jaw and Midwest Pen Pals were always really early inspirations for me, and Merchant Ships. They're like old bands that just played the most like music that you could play in someone's living room and all your friends would scream all the words. So I was in a band with Keegan and Brian called Friendship America for a while. And it was kind of the ethos of that band to just like play whatever songs are going to be easy to sing along to, kind of in a tiger's jaw vein. And I've just been kind of chasing that idea ever since. Just what are the most fun, rambunctious songs to play? So I played in a band called Poblano for many, many years here in Gainesville. And that was kind of like an ADHD punk band modeled after the Front Bottoms. And now I have like four different music projects that are all different levels of chaotic, but that my feels like my point in Camp Trash. I don't write any of the songs. I do love to come in and say, this one doesn't rock hard enough. Can we make it rock harder?
Someone's got to do it, job right? To have. Someone's got to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Someone has to.
And then I pretty much grew up just playing like hardcore music. I started in church pretty much, but I hated playing at church because it was just boring as shit. So I started playing hardcore, which was just, you know, just getting all my like anger out. I try to still bring that like ethos to Camp Trash, even though it's uncalled for. So it gets fun. Yeah.
I grew up going to the shows that Alex played.
The church shows?
Like the Langdon Auger shows, not the church shows. No. Shows.
Yeah.
I remember those pits.
He worshiped us though.
Langdon Auger was a staple hardcore band in like the Sarasota area at a time. It was very, I don't even know if it was good. Like I just remember.
It was terrible Southern metalcore music.
And I'm comfortable saying that in front of Alex because you weren't really part of the writing process. I feel like you were like, you came in to drum for them, like essentially.
Yeah. I was just like an innocent little like 18 year old kid. And they were like, you know, late 20 year olds, like, yeah, it was the time. It was fun.
There's wow. One story. The lead singer of Langdon Auger, is his name Ruben?
Ruben, yeah.
He is not white, but I went to one of their shows and they start with some kind of hardcore like intro. Like, you know, the band's gonna be really hard in just a second right before their first like breakdown or something. And he is like pacing back and forth in front of the stage. And he just, as the music all stops before the breakdown, just yells into the mic, "White power," and just hits so hard. And I've never forgotten that moment.
Yeah. The room, I don't think they minded.
It was yeah. Also a room full of white kids, so it was incredibly confusing.
Yeah. Yeah, they were definitely like a shock factor band that should not have been I don't know. It was...
Like I said, it was a time.
It was a time.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it's good.
Every
I'm
time I die, mailing in the sons of disaster.
Yeah, Sarasota was wild. The hardcore scene was wild.
You guys have been around in music one way or another for quite some time now, and you're a fairly prominent figure in the DIY scene nowadays. I would say Camp Trash. Like, tell us how that has changed, like maybe how the DIY scene has kind of evolved since you guys have started playing music.
Well, we got older, I feel like, as it started. Yeah. For sure. I mean, I think
that's what I love about DIY kids.
Yeah,
I keep getting older.
I keep getting older. So I feel like I felt like I was old when I like entered the scene initially, because like, yeah. Levi, how old are you? You're like...
I'm 27.
You're 27. I'm 30. So like, even when I was like 23 and Levi was 20, and like, so I feel like a lot of his friends' bands were the ones that created the scene locally in Sarasota. So like, we were like on that scene. And like, the reason why I'm pointing that out is because like Worst Party Ever came out of that scene, which is like a big reason why like we kept playing shows, is because they were a band that had longevity locally. They just like were always playing. And then anytime like we were together or able to play shows, like in our old band, like we would always hop on shows with them. And it felt like that had evolved to where Worst Party Ever just got big in the DIY scene. Like they, you know, their streaming numbers just like grew rapidly. There was all of a sudden like everyone knew Andy. Like it just felt like that grew a lot. On top of like Keegan, who is like very, I mean, Keegan and Levi both were really involved in the scene for a long time. Keegan like writes a lot for a lot of different, I feel like he did a really good job of like finding bands that were really good that just didn't have a lot of recognition and really like giving them a platform, because he, and writing about them. And that included like a lot of the bands that he discovered, like not discovered, but a lot of bands that he would like from like Japan and Indonesia and China. And so he like wrote a column called Friendship International that like propped a lot of those bands up. And I feel like he really started to like build a platform for himself, where all of a sudden we were like, through his voice, part of the DIY scene in a bigger way. So I don't really know, because I feel like I've never really been involved in the DIY scene all that much. Like I'm kind of like on the fringes of somebody who just like wrote songs with Keegan, and Keegan was very involved in it. And then as like Cam Trash started and like we were on, I was online a lot more, like all of a sudden I started learning about the scene and finding out all these bands and like started interacting a lot more. But yeah, for me, I just feel like, I don't know, I always felt like a little bit old in the scene. And I feel like, so for me, it doesn't feel much different now. It's like, I just feel like I'm like the dad of the DIY scene at this point. Although Joey Duffy's got that title, so I gotta let Cliff Diver take it. Co-dads. Yeah, all right, I'll take it.
Why not?
Yeah, there can be two dads, Brian. It's 2022.
All right, I'll check in with Joey Duffy on that one. See if he's down. Campaign for co-dads. Brian Gorman, Joey Duffy, co-dads of the DIY scene.
I am not a dad of the DIY scene. When I came up playing music, the bands were all my age. The way I've participated is just really participation. I've been playing in music for a long, long time. Not in good bands or in popular bands or in bands that were particularly like friends with everybody, just playing all the time everywhere. I played in Poblano for a long time. I've got a snot rock project called Levy Skeevy. I played in a solo project band called Buggin for a while. I played in a band called Leg Biters and a band called Off Day. I think I played in two other bands whose names are escaping me right now. But I just, yeah, that's been my whole journey, is just continuously playing. And by nature of that, I just ended up meeting a lot of people.
So let's talk a little bit about your debut LP, The Long Way, The Slow Way. Tell us a little bit about the writing process for that. Just kind of how you went about making this record.
Yeah. So when we first wrote, when we recorded Downtiming, we kind of went into it just like with songs that we had for a long time. And really didn't have any intention of doing anything with them aside from just like recording them, having them, maybe playing some shows. And so like once that became something that like got some momentum and we were able to get a record label, record deal with Kinda Lucky Stars, where all of a sudden like we were tasked with like having to write a full length record. It was kind of the first time where we had to do that. Like we had to write songs for something. It's always just been like, we write songs and then maybe we play them live. So now all of a sudden we were like, okay, knowing that we were going to write an LP, I think we did have a lot of intention of wanting to create something that, not that was like thematic or that was like a concept record at all, but just like something that felt like it was it was one piece record. Like it was something that was thought through from beginning to end a little bit. And even though we didn't like start from scratch knowing that we were going to write a record, and we started writing songs right away, like we did pull from songs that were like written already, or like even songs that had like pieces we like added at to the process of being like, well, let's just work on these and like make them fit. I think we like, as we were going through the process of writing, we started realizing that there was kind of like a way to create an arc with it and create like a story out of what we were writing. And it really wasn't until like almost after the record was created that we realized that there really was like a sequence for the thing that felt like it was cohesive and telling one linear story.
Yeah, I think once you once you start to look at all this, like all the songs that one person writes, like Keegan and Brian really wrote all the songs, but Brian was like the primary songwriter. I think once you start to look at Brian's songs, you can see his, like the themes he uses, the structures he likes to use, even if they're not, I don't know how like conscious it is to reuse certain things, but you can see the things that interest Brian. And once you put the songs next to each other in a record, you can see what things connect to each other. And I think it's interesting to find those through lines after the fact, but there really are several like story arcs throughout the record that as we listen through and resequence the record, any of us were like, oh, this is a different kind of arc for these characters. Like the arc between Poured Out and Church Bells is the arc of figuring out how to stop smoking cigarettes. And I think that there is something in the progression of the songs about like maturing and growing up once you start to listen to them like that.
Yeah, it really felt like, and I was just talking with Keegan about this earlier, but this record actually just came at like a weird point in our lives where like, I really didn't think that there was like music in my future anymore. I really thought that like music, if I was going to be doing anything, it was going to be, writing songs to play live every now and then, like when we're together, like we've always been doing. And so this was really like the first time that like, we talked about this a little bit, but like we were recording the record when Downtiming came out. So like we were in the studio when like Downtiming had officially come out, and we started getting a lot of momentum from that and people were really liking it. And it, like, I just remember having the conversations of like, at what point is the momentum enough for us to like keep doing this? You know what I mean? Like at what, cause like we're all pretty established like in our lives and in our careers. Like Levi's an attorney and like had gone to school for years to do that. And that's what he's passionate about. This is like life's work. I was established at like a company for a long time where I was like, you know, leadership there. And there was like a team under me and there was like, I have a mortgage. I have a soon to be wife. Like we're just all very established in our lives. And it felt like this thing where I was like, I love doing this. And like, we've always loved doing this. At what point does it become the thing that like we can keep doing this and keep writing, keep playing music together? Yeah. Where it feels more like a career and not just a hobby anymore. And not a career, but where we can keep doing it, you know? And
yeah, it really feels like a nearly, like when we were doing it back then, it felt like such an impossible calculation to decide like when is it good enough to risk like the partners that we had, like their steady income, their like steady second source of income to afford like the mortgage and the, it's such a complicated process deciding when are we big enough to do this full time or to do it enough that we have to take less money in from our careers. And
yeah,
keep going.
Sorry. I was saying, in the story of just like, I mean, I hate leaning on like the pandemic helped us because that's so stupid and that's not fair to the pandemic and what the destruction it actually did. But the thing was, is that like the pandemic created space where we didn't have to tour. We didn't have to commit to touring because so we were able to accept like a record deal with Kind of Lucky Stars with the confidence of us being like, well, this pandemic's not going away for a couple of years. Like we can record I love writing music. I love recording music. And if I don't have to commit to touring, like, awesome. Like, let's write a record then and not do this. You know, like I can just release it. And like this, that's a dream. Have someone pay for a record for you. So like, it was just like, so it gave us that space to like say yes to things that we otherwise probably couldn't have. And then now that we're like doing it, all of a sudden, like the questions were like, at what point do you say no to the momentum of like what's happening? And just say like, I can't keep doing this, or like accept it and be like, we're going to accept a free throw tour. We're going to accept a Spanish Love Songs tour. So like, once those things happened and we found out, like there was a lot of moments of like I told my last job, like, hey, I'm going to go on this tour. I think I could still work here, but I don't think I can work like I'm working now. And they worked around letting it happen for me. And so like, that was awesome. And like, you know, Keegan left his job, but he now has a job where he can do it from the road. And Levi miraculously found a way to like be an attorney on the road. I don't know how he managed that one, but like So like there's just like all of a sudden like these things that are happening for us are now happening. But that stress and that anxiety of us like in the writing process for the record was like all there, you know? So like I think when we were writing the record, I do feel like that energy of like feeling like the window's closed on something and like that anxiety, the anxiety that comes with that, I feel like it's kind of baked into the writing a little bit, even though we weren't super intentional about doing that. And I think that's why, I think that's why the themes kind of feel the way they do. Like obviously like Pursuit is kind of that, has that very clearly. Feel Something is like, or at the end of Feel Something, when we talk about like the people we used to be are going to see this all the whole way through. Like it, like a lot of these like themes of just like seeing it through, finishing, getting through the anxiety of like that moment, I think is something that we don't talk a lot about. We don't talk explicitly about like in the songwriting, but like, I think it's in there, you know, I think it's baked in a little bit.
So do you think this kind of like difference in writing for like this record and for Downtiming, like what do you think like the difference was in writing? Because like I know you said there was like a little bit more intent maybe, but is like the process itself different for you, or is it just like a little bit more thought out?
Yeah, the songs were done for Downtiming. You know, for us it was just like, here's the songs. We're going to go into the studio and work with Kyle Hoffer, who's a great producer in Orlando. He's the one that recorded both the EP and the record. But we just went in being like, here's the songs. Like, how can we record this to make it sound cool? Where there was really no intention. It was just like, here's the songs. Like, we think they're cool. We want to have them. We want to document them. Like, our plan literally was to be like, here's our songs. Maybe do a cassette run. And maybe just like if a band's touring to Florida to be like, hey, can we hop on the show? Like we're a band. So like that was literally our only intention. And so with The Long Way, The Slow Way, it became like, okay, this is like, it's like now this is an actual record where it's like, we wanted to be intentional about being like, we're creating this thing. You know, we wanted to be better musicians. So we really worked hard at like challenging ourselves when it came to songwriting and playing guitar. And like, I know Keegan stretched himself out pretty thin when it came to like making sure that he had guitar parts that were just like interesting and outside of his skill level a little bit, which made him a better guitar player. So like, we just really were like, if we're going to now do this as something that feels like this is Camp Trash, this is our name on it. Like we really wanted to put together something that we were proud of. And I think we managed to do that.
One thing I think was so important for the whole process is that we went into the studio without those songs fully written. We had maybe half the songs completed and half the songs were still like rather unfinished. We needed to sort out what they were going to look like. And since we had five people in the studio, us four and then Kyle, it bred a lot of debate about what these songs could look like and how they could feel. And the first couple of days were just running through the songs and kind of structuring the record and how the songs are going to sound. And that is still one of my favorite parts of making music, is like hearing a song and then trying to fight for your version of it. And
yeah,
me and Keegan are brothers. We fought a lot about our versions of what we thought the songs could be. And I think the fighting made them better, even if it was completely unnecessary.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit like while we were in the studio, but like I'm just obsessed with people who I think are more like talented than I am or smarter than I am. I'm like, I love being around people who I think can make me look better because of how good they are at doing something. So like I have like no patience when it comes to songwriting at all. So like for me, if I'm in a space that feels like I'm going to write a song right now. And I have the energy of what I want it to be. I try to see that through as much as I can. And then Keegan and Levi and Alex are both people, or they're all people who like really can take that idea and like craft it into something where it's like, this is actually a song now. Like, this is something that's like, sounds good. And like, you know, you should probably transition it here, or you should like cut this verse in half. Like there was so much of that, yeah, like that part of it is like labor intensive and I hate it. Like that's a part of the songwriting process I don't care for, especially because it's like, for me, like every little thing I do feels like precious to me, where I'm like, this is, I wrote it this way. But like at the end of the day, and I literally just talked about this with Keegan, but like I've noticed like comments about the record now of like moments that people like, and it's always like a moment that I remember in the studio, either like Levi or Keegan were like, oh, we should change this. Or like, I think this lyric could be replaced with this. So it's like, it's cool that people are pointing out like, this is like, I love this line, or I love that, like, I love the way they do this here. And it's like a part that was very intentional in the editing process, you know?
Sounds like a super collaborative process, like in that respect of, you know, that studio time.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm not talented enough to write anything all the way through on my own. Like I only get what I can out of a song. And then I really let people who are good at what they do, which is Alex and Levi and Keegan. And honestly, like, I mean, once it's there, like we all collaborate, but for the most part, like I love hearing their vision for what, where the songs can go. And that's like fun for me, because it's like, you guys hear something in the song that I don't hear. And then they are really good at bringing the best parts of it out. So
you guys also got to play an album release show. So tell us a little bit about that. Like, what was it like having people hear it live for the first time? Like, what was that reaction that you got, and like maybe what you were expecting, and kind of how that just show felt for you guys?
It was a lot of fun. It was in our hometown in Bradenton, so it was a lot of mostly just friends and family, and it ended up being a sold out show, and the venue actually went over capacity and just let other people in, so it was a pretty packed room, but yeah, it was a great time. It was awesome.
It really felt like those old shows we used to have, like in storage units, where all of our friends showed up. They knew every single word to every song, and they were like, we were all just standing in front of them, and they were pressed themselves up against the edge of the stage, just like yelling everything. And it's wild because they knew every single word to every song. Our friends, like a lot of people who knew it all really were our friends. And there were a lot of people who weren't, we didn't know it all, but our friends really took that record, listened to it so much that, like, before it came out, listened to it so much that they knew every single word and came and screamed it all, which is the greatest feeling in the world. Like, you literally can't, I mean, besides getting married, my wife is right here. Besides being married to my wife, it's the greatest feeling in the world.
Yeah. It was incredible. I think Keegan and I always talk about this experience we had where when we saw Modern Baseball for the first time. It was at a venue in Orlando, and I remember it was such a cool experience, because it was like one of the first times they came to Florida, and as soon as they started, like everyone rushed the stage and was like singing along, and their reactions of being like, holy shit, like people know us and they know our songs, was like, that was such a cool experience to see out of a band. Like, I haven't seen that ever, of just someone like not realizing how big they have gotten, and then all of a sudden like people knowing all their songs and them like thoroughly enjoying that. And I felt like I got to experience that a little bit at that hometown show, of just like, yes, it's our hometown. Yes, it's our friends and family. You know, also it was like 200 plus people. So there was more than just our friends and family there, but it was like, it was just like really cool experience and shocking experience to just like see people screaming words back to you of like, we released this yesterday. Like, how are you guys singing along to these words? It was awesome. We've been playing those songs live outside of Florida for so long, because we're a band with four songs, but we went on two big tours. So like, we had to play unreleased songs for the most part, because what else? We could have just, I mean, I guess we could have done our Worst Party Ever covers just the whole time and pretended, but we had to dip our toe into the new songs as much as we didn't want to. But the other thing too is like, I'm the only one that lives in Bradenton still. Well, Alex was living in Bradenton not long before, but I'm the only one that lives in Bradenton still. And none of us are really that connected with like this music scene anymore in Bradenton. So like, I really had a lot of anxiety going into it, being like, will anyone show up to this? You know, like, we're having a show in Bradenton where we're making a big deal out of it. But like, yeah, people did show up and it was awesome. It was just a lot of fun.
Got our album out recently. We were able to play that show. What are we thinking is next for Camp Trash? Anything else in the works? Maybe just some more touring? Like, what are we thinking going forward?
In October, we are touring with Metallica. Yeah. Crazy.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you just exclusive. Told us that? That's crazy. I know.
This is where it debuted.
This is Little Known Tracks
exclusive.
We do have something in October we haven't announced yet. It's not a big thing, but it's a short run with a really good band. And then did I just give it away?
No,
a little bit. That's fine. And then we're actually in conversations, which this is probably going to be news to Levi and Alex, even so, breaking news for all of us, but potentially doing a split with a band in the near future. So,
I know of this one. Yes.
Yeah. So
that band is Metallica. It's Metallica. Are they still making music?
They've got it. They've got to be.
They got to be, right?
They're not that old. I mean, they're old, but they're not that old.
It's probably like one of those bands where none of the original members.
I mean, the Rolling Stones are still like not making music, but they're definitely playing music. So.
Damn, you're right. Yeah, you're right. To present.
To present.
That's so vague. Is it everyone, or is it like...
No, Dave Mustaine, but Lars Ulrich is still in it. Thank God.
You'll finally get to meet him. Or have you already, and we're just...
Oh, yeah, no, we're deep in the Metallica crew.
Yeah, yeah. That's the pipeline we see, Camp Trash, is the Metallica.
The Metallica. Well, we're really excited to see you guys play live with Metallica touring Europe or something.
Yeah, we are too.
Sure, for sure.
No, it's a DIY run. We're doing a real some basement shows with Metallica.
Yeah, I think realistically on that question, we've talked for a long time about what is the Quit Your Jobs tour. And I think like when I think that tour is pretty close at hand. And when we get it, I think it'll be a whole different part for Camp Trash. We're not there yet at the tour that will make us leave all of our careers and go on the road for several months. But that's my hope, is the next step is we get an absolutely enormous band to say, hey, come on the road with us. And we're all like, well, we can't turn this down. Hell yeah.
Yeah. So if you guys are friends with any bands that that have a Quit Your Job tour, we're here.
Yeah, well, we can like get in touch with Dave Grohl real quick for you guys.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Not big enough. We need to go bigger.
Also, Quit Your Job Tour is a really solid name.
It's
for
a great name for a tour.
For a tour. Yeah.
Well, if a band that big gives us a Quit Your Job Tour, we're gonna have our own flyer where we're the headliner. Yeah. It just is the Quit Your Job Tour. Cam Trash, Metallica right beneath.
With special guest Metallica.
Yeah. Special guest with a lot more time to play.
Yeah. Well, Sydney, do you have any other questions for Camp Trash?
So where can we find and follow you guys online and listen to all of your music?
So we're pretty active on Twitter, at Camp Trash, Camp_Trash.
Maybe. Yeah. Yes.
Yep. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Music, Bandcamp. We have like merch t-shirt stuff on Bandcamp. You can also find stuff at the CYLS store, which I'm not sure. It's a limited run. I have no idea what the URL is for that. But maybe you guys can post it or something. But yeah, the Kinda Lucky Stars web store. We're on Instagram as well. Alex runs that one. I don't know anything else. Am I missing anything?
There's a TikTok. Did you get that?
Oh yeah.
I did not.
I'm really trying. Yeah, I'm really trying to make it something.
Same. Levi's gonna turn it into like a Toes account or something at some point. He's gonna be posting pictures of his feet.
TikTok is hard.
That's an interesting turn for Camp Trash. That's a great idea. But, you know,
Eva's gonna start a Camp Trash OnlyFans too. So
could get really funny online.
Well, you guys know Keith, right? From Kinda Lucky Stars and Empire.
Yeah.
Empire.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's like trying to figure out TikTok himself for Mount Oriander. And he just started doing a t-shirt a day challenge. I don't know if you guys have seen this at all, but he wore a different t-shirt every day of the year starting January 1st. And it's, and like, the enthusiasm is like really starting to decline.
It's like he's trapped.
It's a, it was a good idea. It was a good idea.
He's so, yeah, he's so committed to it though. And he keeps, it's, he hasn't stopped.
It's like day 181.
Oh my God.
It's awesome. It's, and like, he's like, I just realized that people don't think this is a band account now. He's like, they just think it's like a t-shirt.
Some guy who wears t-shirts.
I was like, yeah, I mean, like, yeah, try it. Like, I get the idea of being like, I need to just post content on TikTok. But,
yeah.
But I think he missed the mark. And he's like, instead of stopping, he's like, I'm just
going
to keep going.
Off.
I'm just
going
to keep going.
Is it you t-shirts to and other content or no, just
it's
t-shirts?
Just t-shirts? It's just pretty much t-shirts.
Oh, great.
I haven't seen other content.
Yeah, like yesterday he was like, all right, it's day 181. This is my New York Giants tee I've had for like 10 years now. And I don't even like the Giants.
The one, there was one time where it was close. Like he did a shirt of the day from stage, which was good. There was, so it, there was a crossover.
And then he said, "Please clap if you like candy."
Yeah, he's very much a dad too, which is awesome.
We love Keith. I love Keith.
Oh, that's so
good.
That's so fun.
So I do want to know before we go, do y'all Sydney and Alex, do y'all have a quit your job tour? If a band were to take you on tour, what band would it need to be, for either as a musician, as merch person, as a podcaster? What band would it be?
Could you imagine some big band is like, we're going on tour, our opener is these two people, and we're gonna sit on stage with them and they're gonna ask us about their hobbies, and that is what our opener is gonna be.
Actually so sick. A Q&A before the show. You get to know everybody, and then you
interview before the show.
There you go. So
Dinosaur Jr. actually
It gives some added context, you know, like all of a sudden now you're like, hey, that's not just Dinosaur Jr. That's, I don't know, a guy named Dave playing guitar. I don't know the members of Dinosaur Jr. So
it's Dave Grohl. It's
definitely a guy named Dave.
Dave Grohl is in every band, actually. He's in Camp Trash.
Oh, he is. Yeah.
Yeah. Whether
we send him, we're just going to send him a t-shirt every month until he decides to wear one.
That's a tough question.
Yeah, what's the band? What is the band that you would quit your job to go on the road with?
I feel like there's a lot of bands. Like, if
it wouldn't be that hard for you.
No, if somebody was like, hey, you want to come on tour? Yeah.
My job right now is I work in a restaurant. So there's not a lot of, like, the bar's low. Do you guys want to invite us on tour? I'll do that.
Is that what you're asking?
Let's do it. That's what's happening.
Like,
wait, a podcast like merch combination wouldn't actually be a bad idea. You can like, I mean, merch people do a lot of work. I'm not going to like undersell the merch person.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
But I mean, besides the very loud noise that's happening, there's an opportunity. There's a time slot where you could definitely get a podcast in. Take the pod on the road. I mean, there's people do live podcasts, right?
Yeah.
That's definitely a thing.
I don't think I've ever seen a live podcast that is like music based.
Yeah, like it's different for sure.
Oh, what if Song Exploder did like a podcast on the road with a band? They like dissected a song like before you heard it live. That's a good idea.
That would be really cool.
All right, I'm glad we're talking. Yeah, you guys ever?
You keep us in mind when you go on tour
with Metallica.
You guys took
with Metallica.
With Metallica. Yeah.
Right. So when you guys come to Philadelphia, let us know and we'll be there.
Oh, y'all are in Philly.
Yes.
Oh, sweet. I fucking love Philly. It's the greatest city on earth.
That is a very bold statement.
That was one of the most memorable.
That is a really bold statement.
With a free throw, I think.
Yeah, we had a day off in Philly, and it was awesome. We had a lot of fun.
Oh, I love that Phoebe Bridgers song, Day off in Philly.
All right, question then before we go. You were in Philly for a day. Did you have a cheesesteak?
Oh, we had two
We had two?
Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah.
Where did you?
Dog. Yeah, when we got into Philly, we went to, what was that place? It's like Black and White.
Jim's.
Yeah, we went to Jim's. Initially, Alex did not like Jim's.
I did not like Jim's, but the place that I drunkenly walked to at like 2 a.m.
Angelo's.
Okay.
I'm definitely messing this up.
It was like two Philly cheesesteak spots like versing each other.
Pat's and Gino's.
Pat's and Gino's.
Pat's.
Amazing.
So not Angelo's.
I don't know. It was incredible. It was so good.
It was good. I was...
We won't tell anyone that you said that. We're not going to tell anyone.
Don't tell anyone that you like Pat's or Gino's.
Is Jim's the place to like?
There's like any place that isn't Pat's. Literally any place that is not those two.
That's fine.
That's fine.
Like, no joke. Those are the two places in Philly that you don't.
Alex, I'm so sorry. I'm sure they're great, but I was warned immediately upon.
I mean, I'm also the kind of guy who loves Applebee's at Times Square. So that's a correlation.
Yeah. No, thanks for that added context. I think we need it.
Yeah.
You can like whatever you want.
I know.
That's, you go off.
Yeah.
That's a weird thing to Applebee's in general. In my opinion, is weird to be like a big fan of
half off apps after like
half off apps in Times Square. Yes,
in
please.
Times Square. Oh, or, yeah,
oh, like, for sure.
The real goat
is the roast pork sandwich in Reading Terminal Market. There's like one roast pork sandwich place there that with the broccoli rabe just kicks absolute ass. Yeah.
See, that's a good take. That's a good
I'm more of a coffee guy though, and I will say shout out Reanimator because their coffee slaps.
Ooh. Really. So I was on a free throw tour. Did y'all go to McGlinchey's when you were there? Because I told you like six times to go.
I think we just laughed you off by
God
because the place was called I mean the place was called McGlinchey's. So.
You can smoke inside
to my mat.
I don't know if that's a selling point.
You can smoke.
Why wouldn't you go there?
Come on.
You come out smelling like shit.
Well, yeah, you didn't give us details of McGlinchey's. I'm sorry.
That's what I say about any place. Literally anytime someone goes to Philly, I'm like, why wouldn't you go there? You come out smelling like shit.
Oh my goodness. Thank you guys so much for coming on tonight. It's been a pleasure talking to you guys.
Yeah, Sydney, Alex, thank you guys.
Yeah, it was awesome. Thanks for having us.
A lot of fun.
Thank you so much for listening to Little Known Tracks. If you or a loved one want to be featured on an episode of Little Known Tracks, you can send us an email at littleknowntrackspodcast@gmail.com. Also, feel free to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at LKTpod for all of our updates. And occasionally giveaways and such. Once again, thank you for listening. Until next time.